match for. And we have the occasional Tiger grant for cycling that's a couple orders of magnitude smaller than the federal trough for transit. And transit enjoys a regional tax base and an agency that spends that tax base. We have none of those advantages for cycling. So I think that this policy is putting our thumb on the scale a little bit towards the direction that will yield us much greater policy outcomes in the end. The TSP envisions 20 years from now a 25% bike mode share, 25% transit mode share. That's going to be a great city to live in. If it's 30% transit and 20% bike, it'll probably still be a great city, but it'll cost us more to operate it. So in some ways, this is a budgetary choice to deliver the most cost-effective transportation system.
Leah, let me just ask a philosophical question, because I'm trying to reconcile two things. So ever since I inherited my daughter's car, I've been doing more driving. So I spend less time on the number 12 bus, less time on the MAX, less time in other ways of getting to work. And so my neighborhood in Hollywood, I don't feel it's safe to drive during the morning or afternoon rush hour anymore. The level of aggression on the road, the level of congestion on the road, the level of shortcut behavior. I wish I had a Vision Zero handout I could just give people. This morning I almost was delayed further coming to work because of a road rage incident that occurred in front of me and two cars playing chicken, and I thought it was just wild. It's clogged in the morning and the afternoon, and it can't take any more. And so people are adapting by engaging in very high-risk behavior, really dumb behavior. We have tremendous options in my neighborhood, buses, MAX, and other things. The reality is that in my neighborhood, people are buying bigger cars. The way they're adapting is they're buying bigger cars to be safer in a less safe environment, and they're behaving more, in my view, more recklessly. Congestion is up. It's been documented. There's a trend. So on the one hand, we want to invest in the future, but at the other hand, the greatest threat to the current is behavior that we're now saying goes to the bottom of the list in terms of priority. Through a Vision Zero lens, how do we reconcile that?
Super easy question, thank you. You're absolutely right. We are experiencing increased congestion, and it's going to continue with population growth. And thanks to the cheapest gas prices that we've had in decades, people are buying more cars and driving more. NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, just published a report last week that says, get ready for more. The cheaper the gas, the better the economy. People are going to buy more cars, and more driving means more dying. I think we have, we don't have any more roadway in the city of Portland unless we're going to do eminent domain and take private property to build more roads. We don't have more road space. So we need to look at how we allocate that road space among all the various users. And the data time and time again shows us that if you build and design a road for the pedestrian first and then the cyclist, you capture the most safety for all users. I think we have fantastic opportunities in transportation demand management, where we need to be doing a lot of outreach to Portlanders, to new developments, to people who are living here about behavior change and the consequences of aggressive driving, of congestion. And the truth of the matter is more crashes lead to greater congestion. If people would slow down and take their time, congestion would actually ease up and throughput would be a lot more fluid.
And just for my benefit, and I get intuitively what you just said, but if you design this, if you design the infrastructure for the pedestrian, and I also don't like playing dodgeball as a pedestrian, so that's good, and for the cyclist, and I support what Chris was alluding to about a barrier, physical barrier, because in many of the streets in my area, it's just not worked. The accommodation is that the bicyclist gets the short end of the stick, given the way people are driving. So I get that. And then, so how does that change the behavior of the automobile when you follow that vision?
So I don't know that we're going to change the behavior of the automobile. What we're going to do is physically protect the more vulnerable users from them. So a sidewalk with a raised curb provides a physical barrier from the car. And then if you put a bike lane next to that pedestrian that gives a further protection from that car and you physically protect the bike lane, you have multiple layers of physical infrastructure separating our vulnerable users from cars.
Let me provide another policy frame to look at that question. The way I tend to look at it is, as we add population and economic activity, how are we going to accommodate the trips that come out of that, right? Because both the Central City Plan and our TSB Citywide basically say 20 years from now, we're going to have about the same amount of driving, and the new trips have to go to other modes. Because as Leah said, we're out of right-of-way. We can use ITS and some other things to use the current right-of-way a little bit more efficiently, but fundamentally, we're not going to make a lot more lane miles in Portland. So we have to make it, we basically have to attract people to the other modes in order to preserve the limited auto capacity that we have. And that's why it's important to make it more attractive to walk, more attractive to bike, more attractive to take transit. Because if you're frustrated that there are too many cars on the road, either you need to get out and take another mode, or you need to pay for making the other modes attractive enough that the person in front of you will get out of their car and get on the other mode.
And the buses, though, everybody can use the bus. Not everybody can cycle, and especially in Portland, which is not flat like Copenhagen or Amsterdam. And our transit system is not good. So I'm really concerned about the prioritization, just given that fact, and there's not enough in the policy language to strengthen the transit use. So if we keep this prioritization at a very minimum, I want to add something on pedestrian amenities, which I've already provided language for. I think we need to strengthen that transit equity policy and say that we need to consider funding strategies that improve access and equity in transit services, such as raising metro-wide funding to improve service and decrease or eliminate user fees and fares, things like that. It's not robust enough on the transit aspect, which everybody can use. Commissioner Smith raised the issue of Williams. Great example, because I used Williams for the first time since the lane reassignment to get to the Portland Comprehensive Plan hearing at SEI. I will never drive on Williams at rush hour again. It was dark, it was raining, I had to make a left turn to get to SEI. Whenever I mention it to anybody else, we're all going to be using the side streets to get north instead of using Williams if we have to drive. There are places and times when people cannot or will not cycle. When I got off work at OHSU at 11:30 at night on a weekend or any other night, I was not going to get on a bike and drive and ride 7 miles uphill to get home. I would probably never have gotten home, and there was no transit. So, of course, I drove. And unless we improve the transit system, people are going to continue to drive. And so that's the concern I have. And when you're looking at the funding strategies, all of that funding, federal funding, is for downtown. It's not for getting people from residential neighborhoods in outer city either to work in other parts of the city or to work elsewhere at times other than rush hour downtown. I've been pleasantly surprised since I've worked in City Hall how great it is getting in and out of from my neighborhood 7 miles away to Portland to downtown, as long as I do it at rush hour in the morning and get out on time. The last bus to my neighborhood stops at 9 o'clock at night. So if I'm at a late meeting, I'm walking at least a mile to get home.
So, Commissioner, you'll get no argument from me that we need to improve the transit system. I absolutely agree. I would differ a little bit. You said that everyone can take transit. That's not true. There are categories of users that can't use the regular scheduled transit service, and that's why we have paratransit. And I would, by analogy, say that TriMet then equally has programs to teach people who use paratransit skills to use the regular transit system because it reduces their costs. If they can move people from paratransit to a scheduled bus, costs go down, they can provide more service. I think I'm making the same argument with transit and cycling. If we get everyone who can bike onto a bike because we've made it attractive, we're freeing up capacity in the transit system, but we need better transit than we have. Absolutely no argument. There are actually, there are 5 transit policies in the comp plan to 3 bicycle policies, so if you want to make that stronger, I have no objection, but nothing in the comp plan says we shouldn't make transit stronger. We absolutely should.
And, I mean, what we are trying to encourage people to do is walk for trips less than a mile, bike for trips less than 3 miles, and I think there's some behavioral research that suggests that people actually generally won't take transit for a 2-mile trip because walking to the bus stop and then, or they're less likely to, because walking to the bus stop and waiting for the bus and then getting out of the other end seems like a lot to do for a really short trip. People take transit for longer trips.
They often
they do. But if they have the option of cycling, a 3-mile cycle trip, isn't very long. And again, we are, I mean, here's an example of how by focusing on the pedestrian environment, we're enhancing transit. I spent, as you know, much of the past, one of my highest priorities in the past 4 years has been to improve transit service on 122nd, because that was an express community need. What TriMet told us would make it easier for them to do that was for us to make investments in biking and walking infrastructure along that corridor that made it easier for people to get to transit. And I think that was that's been a good division of labor.
Well, and I also wanted to mention that, you know, we're working closely with TriMet on their service enhancement planning process to increase service throughout the city. We've had staff at PBOT working with them on all, I think there's four sections that they're working on. Plus, there's other places to get increased tram, and there's other funding sources. There's other the work that Commissioner Novick did 122nd. So I feel as staff that there are other locations, both in the comp plan, in your processes as a commission, in our work with TriMet and our partnerships at Metro to increase the transit. We agree transit service could be better. This strategy isn't in the location to do that.
If I can just add to, I think we're having a conversation at multiple levels. There's kind of the big policy level where we're talking about investment in various modes, and transit investment is critically important. And then I think also, when we look at policy 9.6, there's also an implementation level to that. And really 9.6 is primarily around the implementation level, so that when future planners are making decisions about how do we use a given street, the hierarchy is clear. The ordered list provides guidance in terms of which modes we emphasize there. And I've been thinking about this issue a lot, and I'm also in the age cohort that's beginning to experience some changes in my ability to use the various modes. And I think there's a couple of things we need to recognize. First of all, that the ordered list is a radical change for a community to say, this is the direction we're going. It's the right list. I believe it's in the right order, and I think the Planning Sustainability Commission believes the same. But it is radical, and therefore it's going to require public understanding and public support. So we've spent a lot of time working on the language to try to make sure that we're giving adequate written guidance to the next generation of planners who are going to be making these decisions on a day-to-day basis. And so I think we just need to recognize a couple of things. One is that the transitions in our population, we are growing in age cohort and younger age group of folks for whom walking and bicycling is normal and more highly accepted behavior than it was for my generation, where I really grew up with cars. But we also have to recognize that there's some difficult decisions, and those decisions are subtle. And so when we're talking about equity among a group of road users and optimizing rights of way, those are subtle balances that we're asking people to achieve. And my own belief is that we're not really going to get very far by setting up policies where we're angering motorists and making them resistant and really feeding into the issues that you were talking about, Commissioner Fish, where anger and road rage are not the pathway to getting towards a healthy, walkable, climate-stable community. So this is an area where I think we're heading in absolutely the right direction with the policy as it's written, but we're going to have some work and some fine-tuning to do over time.
Leah, other than the question of where we place charging stations, what's an example of where, under the proposed ordering, a zero-emission vehicle would be preferred over a single-occupant vehicle?
I can think of a couple examples. You know, one is just in the emissions itself and the climate impact. On a really practical, granular level, it's a question of, do we put public charging stations in a particular location, and do we dedicate those recharge stations to electric vehicles, or do we allow hybrids to park there as well? And how do we enforce that, as opposed to just allowing them to be regular parking places?
Yeah. So I think it's on similar lines, just if it's a zero-emission vehicle or possibly even a shared vehicle, we would have that could have a priority over, again, a single occupancy vehicle. So really it's the me driving to work by myself, sort of having the least amount of room to either park or maneuver versus if I'm in a zero emission vehicle, there might again be a lane I can go in or a place I can park. Or again, a lot of our zero emission vehicles are also shared vehicles or might be in terms of Zipcar or shared cars. So again, that would have a higher level of accommodation either in parking or in a space or in a place to charge.
And just to warp your brains a little bit, it's pretty clear that during the period of this comp plan, autonomous vehicles will be a real thing. Those are likely to be, in many cases, zero-emission vehicles. The vehicle doesn't require a driver. And it will be critically important to the success of our strategies here whether those are single occupancy vehicles or shared vehicles. And I'm working to get some language in the TSP that will give us a bias towards shared vehicles. So lots of things to think about here.
Go ahead.
So the next comments that came up related to this strategy were from the freight community.
Before we get to that,
sure.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just want to mention something in passing. I have, this is just a flag for the council. Language is still under development, but I've had some extensive conversations with both planning and PBOT about making sure that our street connectivity policy supports what we've just discussed. And there's a draft that's being worked on that will require future street plans for areas that have significant redevelopment potential. So this is a key issue in terms of getting it right this time, where, you know, in the past, 82nd Avenue, for example, or 122nd Avenue was developed with very large commercial parcels with no street grid and low density. Now we're saying it needs to be dense, but it also needs to have a street grid. So I'm working on plan language about that. And then similarly, requiring that land be aggregated into sites that are capable of being developed in site plans which advance design and connectivity goals, because we've had a lot of flag lot and other development that is inherently contrary to the discussion that we've just had. If you want people to walk, bike, ride transit, then having people at the end of a cul-de-sac, you know, behind another house in an apartment complex probably reduces the likelihood of that trip being by some means other than a car. So I'm working on language in our office for my amendments that in effect strengthen what the PSC already came up with, and that try to enshrine the discussion that I've been having between the two bureaus to make sure that this time, probably the last time, as I've talked about the how long street grids last, this is the last time, last chance we have to get it right. So working on language about that, and it'll be in my package of amendments.
And I've seen that language and been working on that as well. Sure. So just quickly, for last on this item, the freight community made some written testimony. We had already made quite a few changes to the hierarchy and the strategy through our work with the joint modal committees and our consultant to address this issue with our freight group, and policy 9.7 was written to address this concern about separating the movement of goods from the movement of people. And again, we have a letter that we can share with you from our joint modal committee team supporting that language change. So we feel that we don't need to make any additional changes to the language to address that. So I think I'm going to follow what Deborah had done and just on your council choices let you know what those choices are now. I don't think you necessarily have to make them right now from my understanding of how the work sessions work, or if there's other stuff people wanted to say. But in terms of the strategy options, it's adopt the PSC recommended version of this policy. B, which is my recommendation, or our recommendation as staff and commissioners, is revised as recommended by PBOT staff, including upgrading ADA objective to policy. And again, this is the work that we did with Commissioner Oxman. Revised as recommended by Elders in Action and AARP, which is, again, moving the transit above. And then change how the policy applies in relation to freight in response to the freight committee. So those are the four options right now. Okay, so I'll move on to parking. Is that all right? Okay. So we also got, I got to look at which nose I'm looking at. Okay, we had verbal and written testimony related to concerns about increase, about parking, especially as related to increased density, where you're looking at making changes to the comprehensive plan and to zoning to increase density in centers. I know I heard it from my neighbors in Multnomah Village. I think we also heard it from some folks in Outer East Portland. So what we wanted to just sort of highlight in your packet is the existing policy that was adopted by Planning and Sustainability Commission, which is a change of how we are looking at parking and parking management. A lot of the work that we're doing with the citywide parking strategy that I believe you've heard a work session on and briefings outlines a number of strategies and ideas for working on this parking management. The comprehensive plan policies do not prohibit off-street parking or the of that. It does work to limit the off-street parking, but doesn't mean prohibiting, and changing of the policy could be building more parking. And as we just sort of talked about in terms of single occupancy vehicle, increased parking supply can mean an increase in single occupancy vehicles as well. And so that's a concern that we have back to our Vision Zero statements and some of the other things we've talked about. We feel that the parking toolkit that we are working on, and our staff is here if you have questions about that, along with the zoning code amendments that will be coming with the implementation of both the parking strategy as well as transportation demand management, will address these concerns. The policies as written and as recommended by the Planning Commission are the foundation for a lot of this proposed work that we're already embarking on, as well as some work that, again, the zoning code and other tasks and what are called Task 5 are working on now. So from a staff perspective, we would not propose any changes to the policy.
So, colleagues, I support all of the parking language that's in here. The challenge is there's nothing in here that says occasionally we might need some off-street or on-street parking. So when we think back to the Division Street issues that we had several years ago, and we put a very modest amount of some parking in some developments, there's currently something in the comprehensive plan that says think about parking once in a while and even provide some if necessary. There's nothing in here that allows a future council to do that. And so there needs to be something that says occasionally you might want to provide some parking.
Commissioner, 957 says limit the development of new parking spaces to achieve land use, transportation, and environmental goals, especially in locations for frequent transit service. I think if you're limiting the development of something, then you're acknowledging that some of those things will be developed.
No, you can limit it to nothing. So there needs to be something, and I had some conversations with your staff to come up with something that says something like, occasionally you might want to think about having some parking. Obviously, that's not very good comprehensive plan language, but something that says, future councils, yeah, in some situations where there is no place where people are going to have a car, or a few of the people in a development may have a car, there needs to be somewhere to put the car. Thing is that staff is working on something. I proposed some language which they don't like, that's fine. I'm not particularly wedded to it. I just want something in there that says something along the line with the underlying value that I just stated. I mean, the comprehensive plan is supposed to have some balancing requirements in it, so some principles of values so that future councils can make that choice. If everything says limit, prohibit, restrict, it's going to be really hard for somebody in one of our seats to say, no, really, this is beyond reasonable, and we need to have a little bit of parking.
So we have been working with Commissioner Fritz on some possible language. I think I would want to get direction from the whole council if that's language we should continue pursuing. In terms of, I think we feel, and Judith Gray is here, has been in charge of our parking work, that the work that we've done and the policies in here don't prohibit the things that Commissioner Fritz is asking for. Again, it's maybe not as explicit in terms of being able to do that, but there's nothing that prohibits it, and there's nothing, it just said that it's limit versus being able to allow. And I think Judith can speak more closely to some of the parking toolkits and the management work that we're doing that could address possibly the concerns that Commissioner Fritz has.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
You just said something interesting, and I'm going to ask Susan this. When we wrap up, you said you wanted direction from the council as to whether you should work with Commissioner Fritz.
I can work with Commissioner Fritz.
Good luck with that. No,
true.
Yeah, there you go. I actually have. Yeah, thank you. I have some questions about just end game and protocol, which I think we need to establish. And for what it's worth, my operating assumption is that if I have a colleague that cares about an issue,
under the protocols the mayor has established, you work up language, you talk to the bureau that has the lead, or the bureau can respectfully, during the course of that discussion, say, you know, we're not crazy about this, but we'll try to make it as unobjectionable as possible. And then the colleague has to convince at least two other people that it should, that their view should prevail. Am I right, Mayor?
Right. That's how it works.
So there are no, in effect, bad ideas at this stage in terms of crafting amendments, because we want to get to a place where colleagues, as advocates, can put things on the table, because we can't have those discussions here. Commissioner Fritz, have I stated it? Thank you.
I have to say that off the top of my head, the language Commissioner Fritz came up with, although it might not be comp plan-y, didn't sound particularly objectionable to me. So I think we could probably work together.
So the parking policy options are adopt the PSC recommended version or change policy to increase emphasis on provision of more off-street parking as requested by some testimony and Commissioner Fritz. And so we will continue to work with Commissioner Fritz on some of that language to bring to you as a part of the amendment package in March. Okay. All right. So I believe that Peter Hurley and Zeff Wagner from our staff are going to come up and talk to you about some stuff in the project list, both testimony that we received as well as some changes that we've made. And thank you, commissioners from the Planning Commission.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Peter Hurley, a senior planner with PBOT. I'm here with my colleague, Zeff Wagner, to give you an overview and answer any questions about the transportation system plan project list and the financial plan as well. Commissioner Fish made the point that our current system is strained with traffic. We know that, and it is a significant issue. Director Treat referenced the trip gap. We've done some work as part of our transportation system plan development, working with both the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Metro on modeling. And one of the things that we've discovered is that if we attempt to accommodate the 120,000 new jobs and 260,000 new residents over the next 20 years by 2035, that we would add 538,000 additional trips every day to the current system. Our system can't handle that. So the challenge is, how are we going to reduce those potential additional trips? The transportation system plan that is before you, along with the land use changes that are recommended as part of the comprehensive plan, and additional policy improvements, including transportation demand management, can close about 90% of that gap, taking it down to about 63,000 trips that we would still have. So we can close about 88% of that gap with the investments that are part of the transportation system plan, plus the land use changes to reduce the length of trips and encourage more walking and biking, and some transportation demand management policies that encourage people to walk, bike, and take transit more, to use those investments that we're making over the next 20 years. So we can get pretty close. We are actually working on the last 63,000 to finish closing that gap so that we are able to accommodate the job growth and the population growth over the next 20 years while maintaining mobility for those essential trips, the transit trips, the freight trips, the trips that, as council members pointed out, sometimes people have no other choices. Those are the driving trips that we wish to accommodate while improving people's options for taking other trips. So the project list that you have before you is the result of a fairly extensive effort to analyze each project to determine how much it contributes to each of the outcomes that you have identified in previous plans that are priorities for us: our economic, our environmental, and our equity goals. We also publicly reviewed the project list fairly extensively and gave additional points to projects that received public support. That was a recommendation from Commissioner Novick that we actually include in the scoring of the projects that had higher levels of public support. So that was a key component in our initial recommendations. In response to public testimony to council in December and January, Zeph, would you please hand out that list? We have a slightly updated project list that reflects, yes, there's one change, one minor change in there. Not since this morning, but just to prevent any confusion, I'd encourage you to use this top list.
Sure.
Thank you much. So the cells, the cells highlighted in yellow are PBOT changes from the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendations, and they include things like rescoping a project. There's one on here where, based on recommendations we received, we expanded the length of the project by about 5 blocks. So you would see that described in the project description, for example, or the start location for a project. So rescoping is part of what's in here. We've also added projects based on community support, and they too would be shown in yellow. The red cells reflect projects that we're recommending be removed from the project list, either because they've already been completed, an example of that would be the Orange Line that recently opened, and there are other projects. We received public comments on a few projects that there was strong opposition to the project, and after taking a closer look at it, we determined that it would be a low priority. So to give you an example of I'll mention three examples of why we're proposing these changes. And the first one is on page 3. There's an arrow that points to this project. It's the Northeast 7th, Northeast 9th. Thank you. At the bottom of page 2, the Northeast 7th, Northeast 9th Bikeway Project. It's number 401116. So in response to community feedback that the Bureau should consider neighborhood greenway treatments on Northeast 7th rather than on Northeast 9th, we're proposing to modify the project description to include both of those potential alignments. So that's an example where we're changing the project description in response to testimony we received from the, or we're recommending that we change the project description and the TSP in response to that feedback. On the following page, you'll see another arrow that points to the Thorburn Gillum Safety Improvement Project. It's 70083. And we're proposing to add this project in response to community feedback from the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association about the need for traffic calming and pedestrian improvements so people can safely cross to nearby destinations. The next project that I'd like to highlight is on the following page, page 4. It's project number 90054, and there's a point 3, which indicates anytime there's a period and then a 1, 2, 3, or 4, they are segments of a similar project. So one of the significant improvements that I think we're making here is to recognize that with limited dollars, we need to often segment projects, and this is one where the neighborhood recommended segmenting the project so that the critical improvements could be made earlier in the system. We're also recommending that that project be done earlier than it would have been otherwise because it's a less expensive project by segmenting it out. So we're also at the very beginning proposing to shift the scope of two of our citywide programs. We recognize that often relatively small projects, a $30,000 or a $50,000 project, can be quite cost effective. So we're recommending the creation of citywide programs. There are two at the outset that we're suggesting some additional flexibility in those, and those include the Pedestrian Network Completion Program and the Alternative Street Design Program. Those are examples. I've given you a lot, so I'll pause here and see if you have questions.
So I have, thank you, I have three questions, and I'm going to use the original map, which I, the original list, which I think is still valid except for one change. So I did a quick scan, and I found outside of the two citywide projects that are on page one at the top, I found one project that was east of 82nd. So why is that?
I think it reflects the fact that we worked very closely with East Portland Neighborhood Organization and advocates in East Portland, as well as the Planning and Sustainability Commission. With our original list, we have a very, very extensive set of improvements, bicycle improvements, pedestrian improvements, access to transit improvements, in part because we are, along with TriMet, recommending three additional bus lines in East Portland. So I believe that the original list, including the strengthening amendments that the Planning and Sustainability Commission made to look at transformative transit projects in East Portland as well as closer in the inner ring, reflect the fact that that original list is very strong.
So they're on the constrained list already?
Yes. In fact, the vast majority, over 90% of the projects that were recommended as part of in our discussions with the organization are on the constrained list, which is the...
What is that?
The constrained list is more likely to be funded in the next 20 years. The unconstrained list are projects that are important, but given our financial forecast, we're unlikely, less likely to be able to fund those.
So just to state the obvious, this is a list of amendments to the project list, not the project list itself.
The second question is... There's two pots of money here. There's the two citywide items on page one, which total $80 million. And since they're citywide, presumably the equity lens as to how you would propose to allocate them answers my question a little bit about, you know, how much of this is going to underserved areas like East Side. But the other category, second biggest category, is the three streetcar programs. Hollywood, Montgomery Park, MLK, and if you add those numbers up, they're staggering, but they don't have a time frame listed, so why is that?
We have identified time frames for the constrained list, the ones that we think that we can fund in the next 20 years. Projects that are proposed for the unconstrained list, which include the three streetcar projects you mentioned and several others, are ones that because we don't anticipate, without a new revenue source, being able to identify when they would be constructed, they're on the unconstrained list. If a new revenue source was to become available, we'll have a much better idea of when a project could be constructed. They're not. What you will notice is that if a project begins with a 1, it's from one of the neighborhoods. If it begins with a 2, it's another of the neighborhoods all the way through. Actually, number 1 is citywide, all the way through 9, which are the ones in the southwest.
Bottom of page 4, Montgomery Street, Southwest Vista, bicycle facilities. I mean, are there more than 5 people in the city that actually use Montgomery and Vista for bicycling? I mean, that's like you got to be, you know, a mountain climber.
We've actually received a lot of testimony from people in Southwest Portland that although most people use Barber or Terwilliger, a lot of people, especially if they work in the west part of downtown or Goose Hollow, that kind of area, they do find Montgomery to be a good alternative. It does require climbing, and I think anybody who is a cyclist in Southwest Portland has already made that decision to do a lot of climbing. But it's still very important, and that was identified as an alternative to staying on Vista, which is a higher traffic street, and using Montgomery instead. And this amendment was to identify one section of that that's a little more important, a critical link to fund that in a nearer time frame.
As someone who used to bike to work occasionally from Southwest Portland, it may be that people will choose one route coming in and another one going home.
Colleagues, I'd actually like to lowlight one of these amendments because it's something that galls me. 6012, the seismic retrofit of the Kittredge Bridge has moved from the constrained to the unconstrained list. The reason for that is that there's a much higher cost estimate that was originally identified, and something's on the unconstrained list if we don't see where the money is going to come from for it. This is the bridge that connects to our petroleum tanks. It's a critical piece of our infrastructure. And so it's an extremely important project, but it's something that we're going to need to ask Salem to allocate specific money for. So I just wanted to call that out, that it's a critically important project. We moved it to the unconstrained list, not because of its value, but because of its cost and the lack of a currently identifiable funding source.
So the mayor and I had some discussions about adding streetcar extensions, and I noticed that you have the Northwest, the MLK, and the Sandy suggestions that we had made. I'm not seeing Foster Road, and I would like to see Foster Road added as an aspirational streetcar line.
It's on the map, right? It's on the streetcar system map.
It would be nice to have a project number and an estimated cost.
Very good. Other questions at this point? I would like to note that the Columbia River Crossing project still is on the project list in part, or in large part, because the regional transportation plan still contains the project. Since our transportation system plan must be consistent with the regional plan, we're proposing to we await the result of the 2018 RTP regional transportation plan update to bring back a recommendation on the disposition of that project at that point.
Sort of a vestigial item, like an appendix, right?
Colleagues, I will say the other night I was at the port dinner with Commissioner Fritz, and I was sitting with the mayor pro tem of Vancouver. So under their form of government, they elect essentially the president of the council. And on the off chance that she had the authority to bind the city on that night, Tom Chamberlain and I negotiated a bridge with light rail, pedestrian, and she seemed fine with it. So I think we have some all of a sudden some traction on that.
We're looking forward to your amendment. So in response to a request from Portland Streetcar and the mayor, as you noted, we do have three streetcar projects on the unconstrained list. Finally, the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommended a new local arterial bridge to Hayden Island as part of the TSP Refinement Studies chapter, which is in the next stage of the transportation system plan. The refinement studies are those where we've identified a need but don't actually have a cost estimate or enough detail on the project to be able to put it forward as a specific component yet. That said, that is certainly an option for you to, we have heard that there is some interest in perhaps moving that project from the refinement studies chapter to the unconstrained list. So I wanted to make you aware that that is an option. We don't have a cost estimate or a clear project description yet for that at this point in time. So we did identify three options for council consideration, the first of which is to retain the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommended list. In other words, make no changes, none of these. You could make some or all of the changes that are recommended on the list that you have before you today. And I would also like to, as I just mentioned, the Hayden Island project that is not listed in here as an unconstrained project at this point in time because it is in our recommended refinement studies chapter. So you could choose to change that if you desire.
Ask the same question. What's the operative difference between those two characterizations in the plan?
So a lot of times we'll identify a need where there is, we know that at some point in time we will either need a project or some other way of addressing the need, and in this case it's local access to Hayden Island. What we don't have, in part because the lack of clarity around the Marine Drive interchange and the proximity of those two projects, is a clear project description, a project cost, that would allow us to then put it on to the unconstrained list. So what we're saying is, hey, we need to look at this. There's a need here. Let's do some additional analysis, some additional study, work with, in this case, the Oregon Department of Transportation because of their facilities in that area, and then come up with a recommended project that could go on either the constrained or the unconstrained list. So it's like the pre-list stage.
Well, so, but we're doing the comp plan now, so let me ask the question even more simplistic way, and that is, what harm would be done by putting it on the unconstrained list now?
I don't think there would be harm done. It's a matter of putting a big asterisk there that the cost and the scope could change quite a bit as a result of further project development in the area.
Yeah, okay. Well, for other council members' benefit, the reason that I've been having this discussion is that there may come a time in which the property owners on Hayden Island have a sufficient incentive to participate in LID to build a bridge. If we zone the property correctly, i.e. the way the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network suggested that it be zoned, which is for much more than strip malls on the west end of East Hayden Island, not that the city will be necessarily in a position to build that bridge anytime soon, but if waterfront property with a higher zoning designation turns out to be worth investing in, somebody might say, I'll build that bridge. And we want to have the city in a position so that they can do that.
Just one other question. So the Sullivan's Gulch Trail pieces, this is, they're in yellow, so you've added this. 40118.1.2.3 and 40119. So I think it's self-evident. I just want to be clear. The biggest challenge with Sullivan's Gulch at the end of the day is going to be working out an agreement with the railroads as we get, sort of particularly when we're west of 42nd. These look like the kinds of improvements we can make that are more related to 205 and access. And but it looks we still have to crack the nut of how we get the approval right to run the trail next to the rail.
In some of those cases, yes. You'll notice that the changes that we're proposing here reflect the fact that in at least one of the segments that there is. There isn't a need to negotiate with the railroad, that the right-of-way is a public right-of-way, and therefore the project could perhaps, that segment could perhaps
that's the further forward. East.
Yes.
But I'm glad it's on the list because, I mean, it is, with all of the focus now on these trails, North Portland, out in my neighborhood, if we can't connect 205 to downtown along the Banfield, we've just missed the motherlode of opportunity, and we take a lot of traffic off of dangerous streets in the process. Plus, we probably leverage a lot of development, bike-friendly development along that as well. So I'm glad it's on the list.
Guidance, any of us want to provide? Peter, anything else that you two haven't covered yet?
Nothing at this point in time. Thank you for your feedback.
That's good. Good work. Okay, and then before we close, I know Commissioner Fish had some more questions for Susan.
Susan,
so
please put you back on the hot seat.
And team.
Susan, we're moving inexorably towards some decision times points, and I guess it's helpful for me to review the ground rules of the end game. So your commission has made a set of recommendations. Your staff is helping us review and evaluate those recommendations. The public has testified in some instances at odds with some of the recommendations. And I'm not putting words in any staff person's mouth, but it is conceivable that staff may have a principal disagreement with the commission on some of these issues. So we've got commission, staff, public, and it's moving to the council. At the council, my sense is that Commissioner Fritz and the mayor seem to be the most engaged in terms of the amendment process. And you are working on a technical set of amendments, sort of, a laundry list of things that almost are no-brainers that we agree need to be made. Am I so far so good?
Okay. So here's the piece that I want to make sure I don't miss. That is the advice of staff where there is a principal disagreement with the commission. And since the staff, since you work for and with the commission, how do we ensure that we're getting feedback on specific matters where staff may disagree with the commission? We're not trying to create a food fight here, but we're trying to we're trying to put some daylight on that so that we can make a more informed decision.
Okay. So it's my responsibility and the staff's responsibility to help the Planning and Sustainability Commission to provide the best recommendation they can to you, and that's what they've done. And during that process, we gave them all of our advice, technical advice, political advice of how things might move through. We took all of the community wisdom from the thousands of people who provided advice and put that together and gave that to you. Ultimately, I work for you all. The way I look at it is it's my responsibility now to get this to the best point it can be. I feel comfortable in disagreeing with all of you, and I feel that that's a really great position to be in, so that I feel like I can say, here's what the planning, and that's why we laid out the options the way we did. Here's what the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommended. In some cases, since their recommendation, some of them have also had some new ideas, and we've told you what those are. Staff has told you what other technical issues have come up that we think might be different than what the PSC recommended. And then we've listened to all of you and the additional information we've gotten from the hearing. So I'm feeling really comfortable that we can have that conversation with you.
Okay, so take the technical amendments out of it for a second, because I'm assuming that we're going to have a laundry list of technical amendments that we can all say, fine, we'll adopt that as a package. When we come back as a deliberative body outside of a work session at a full council meeting, and the mayor brings forth an amendment, or Commissioner Fritz brings forth an amendment, or anyone else, will we have the benefit of an independent assessment of that amendment at council? In other words, the mayor has scrubbed something he feels strongly about, and he announces he's a zealot on this subject. Will we have someone at a staff level who is available to say, well, respectfully, we understand the mayor's point of view, but planning came down here, and you have a range of options? I mean, this is delicate, but I just want to make sure I understand the ground rules.
That's my job, and I feel comfortable and actually grateful that I have a boss who won't care, I don't think, if I disagree with them.
Well, he will be keeping a list.
Now, at some point,
you know, you'll be testing the yeah. outer limits of his patience.
I think a lot of these issues are going to come down to there is a technical answer which we will look at and say, here's what we think is the right answer. There may be community reasons why you want to go a different direction. And so I want to be able to put out for you from our best advice, which is a mix of the community wisdom and the technical sort of how streets work, how land use works, and put that choice in front of you. Ultimately, though, you know, when I went to planning school some 30 years ago, you know, it was about putting the best options on the plate for the decision maker. And so, that said, I feel I get to go a little further and give my best advice.
And I guess because this is so complicated and there's so many moving pieces, you know, I go back to a couple of recent planning exercises we've done as a council in the last couple of years where, you know, literally we were given handouts like this with three boxes that prompted the various options we had. And then I just want to make sure, particularly on the policy questions, that we've established a set of ground rules where there is a robust daylighting of the competing interests and issues with a capable advocate on the council and the other members of the council able to be brought along.
I think you have two tools that will help do that. One is using the kind of a framework with the checklist and all that to help you make good decisions in a way that makes sense. The other is that you all created the Portland plan and you came to some very basic agreements on what the basic policies were around a strategic plan for the city for the next 30 years. And so I think that really helps put many of the issues on the same page. Doesn't mean you can't change your mind now in certain areas, but it does mean that we did set some direction. I think that provides a really great framework for the decision making for this.
Just last point. Is there the possibility that there could be some significant community-sponsored issue that doesn't find an advocate or a sponsor on the council that gets orphaned?
Absolutely. And I think that you have heard directly from many, many either resident groups, business groups, other special interest groups, from us directly on items that we have tried to make sure that you've seen them all. We are trying to make sure that you know that those items exist, and we've met with your staff in generally weekly over the past few months to make sure that those are all out there. If none of the five of you pick one of those up, then those items obviously will be left on the table.
There might be significant orphan issues that none of us have an idea that it's not on somebody else's list. So is that an exercise you'll engage in, too?
Are you saying that you may not have wanted to pick it up, but you're hoping someone else will have?
I may be totally unaware of it.
Right.
And it may be an important issue. I mean, maybe I just zoned out at the hearing or something like that.
Right.
But it's an important issue, and none of us hasn't made it onto any of our lists. Can we count on you to sort of flag what you consider to be significant orphan issues?
Yes.
You will, too. Right?
Yeah, right.
So if none of us takes up issue X, and there's somebody out in the community that says, I got to change this plan on that issue. And none of us proposes that as an amendment. I suspect we'll hear from them.
And will the community be able to track that because, in part, we'll be publishing all of these things in advance? I see Deborah nodding her head. So, pardon me? And when is the last hearing that someone could raise an issue that was orphaned and that we didn't have on anyone's bucket list?
We have two hearings scheduled, April 14th and 20th. What we were proposing to do, though, is have those hearings focus on the amendments, so on the published list of amendments on March 9th. So it would be up to you to determine whether you are also opening up the opportunity to testify about something that's not on the amendments list. If somebody had testified earlier and doesn't see their amendment,
I guess I'm less concerned about testifying on it and more about having a mechanism that can trigger what Charlie referred to, which is some group that is interested in something, seeing that it's not on anyone's list, contacting Commissioner Saltzman and saying, how come this isn't moving forward?
We're going
to forward all those to Commissioner Saltzman, but having some fail-safe so that something goes by the wayside.
So what we'll do, we had published the tentative amendments list a week or two ago that the public was able to see. It was posted. There have been a number of conversations with your offices since then, and we can update that list this week so that people can see it before the actual list is gelled on March 9th. We could have another interim list so people can start to see, is my issue on the list or not? And if they don't see it, they may be contacting you. But I think that would be the best way to flag sort of what the current tentative list looks like, have that available, and we can probably get that up today or tomorrow so that people can start to see whether their issue is on the list or not, on one of your lists. And the way it's structured is there's a list for each of you for what you have already flagged for us as your amendments. But until March 9th, it's not final.
Is that workable as far as everybody's concerned? Good. Excellent work. We're making real progress. Thank you very much.